It's February 25th, it's and I think I was the first person to write Jesus Loves You Long Time on the web.
Bullshit.
Games, video 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 games.
It's February 25th, 2009, and this podcast is better than having sex while listening to a podcast.
This is Idle Thumbs 20, and I'm Chris Remo.
I'm Nick Reckin.
And I'm Jake Rodkin.
a wacky phenomenon generated itself on our forums, a couple weeks ago at this point. It's been going on for a couple weeks, and we keep meaning to bring it up, and we haven't. Where after our incessant fucking, callbacks to the... it will blow you away, IGN.com thing.
It was, what was that from? Was that Gears of War 2?
I think it was Gears of War, yeah.
Yes.
Our readership on the forums decided to create a thread full of other possible things a game might do according to IGN.com.
I think our second one was, it will rape you in a hole.
Yeah, oh, right. I forgot about that,
that
one
was
already.
I think that was what started the ball rolling.
Right, because that was our falsified one.
Yes.
This game will rape you in a hole. And so our readers brilliantly decided to just make an entire goddamn thread full of this shit. Jake, I think you've got the first page, so if you want to toss out some of these. This is sort of like reader mail, but early.
Yeah, this is from Groucho Club, who says this game will melt its own retail box. This game will curb stomp your mother, says GDF. He who also said this game will rape you in half and stuff you through a mailbox, IGN.com.
I love that that one takes this game will rape you in a hole and just completely and turns it into something horrible. Like,
stuff you in a mailbox.
Yeah.
It's that sounds like something possible, from a postal even game. More repulsive. Wait, what?
It sounds like it's from Postal.
Yeah,
or something.
It really sounds like something you could do in Mad World or Postal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Stuff you in a mailbox. Shit on your face.
This game is actually happening.
I like that one. Who's that?
That's Miffy495.
Yeah.
Squids are technically not animals.
You know what's good about that one? That's a real fucking statement from an IGN review. I can't remember. It might have been Viva Pinata or something. I can't remember the game.
Squids are technically not animals.
Someone else will remember, but it was.
Was that like in the negative column? Like, that's when they subtracted a point?
No, it was some game.
Replay value, yeah. Squids are
not animals.
It was something like
negative
game. It was some game, and it was like, I think it might have been Viva Pinata, but I can't remember. It might not have been. Anyway, some game where there are different animals, including squids, and the author was like, you can interact with a number of different animals, including, baboons, giraffes, dogs, cats, squids, and then in parentheses, even though squids are technically not animals.
Squids are a plant or a fungus.
What the fuck did he think they were? Anyway, that got...
I had like a major in like marine biology and a minor in English.
That I think that actually...
Finally,
at the time,
a use for my...
At the time, our forums called that out,
yeah,
and so I'm glad it's returned.
This box will give you a paper cut. I enjoy that one. Yeah.
One of my favorite ones from... Well, Erky has two good ones. Erky's one of them is, this game will debase you, IGN.com. And then possibly my favorite, you're worth it, IGN.com.
You're worth it.
Sergi panders
this
to
like an Oprah
our
quote.
Lame asses with hooray for you, IGN.com.
That phrase is banished, actually.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, I also like El Muerte's Nostradamus didn't see this one coming, IGN.com.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, and here's another actual real one. Two real ones, actually. Here we go. Scratch says, this one is completely real. I found it on the back of the EB Games ad booklet thing for Resistance Retribution. Damn, is it awesome. IGN.com.
Sweet.
And then letter T has another real quote. So hardcore, it will tear your face off. IGN.com. In reference to House of the Dead Overkill. Like, that's
nice.
One of the ones
shit.
That's so preposterous, it sounds like one of ours.
This game will tear your face off.
Yeah.
And stuff it in a mailbox.
Curb stomp your mother and stuff you in a mailbox.
Yeah.
IGN.com.
Yep. So, good job, readers. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you
thanks,
for those.
Thank
this
you
game
for
will kill you.
Oh, LeChimp, do you like games? This is one of them. this game has level design. IGN.com from Grouch Club. Anyway, there's a whole bunch. There's fucking three pages of this on the forums. It's pretty good.
Funny to me the moment that I actually picture them in sort of an extreme font next to sort of like sort of like a bloody girl holding a chainsaw next to it or something.
With certain words larger than the others.
Yes.
Like, someone posted this is a picture one of them.
Someone posted a picture of the classic Ikaruga box art. The fervent anticipation for this game increases or whatever. Anyways, a classic IGN. That site, man. It's good job for them. Anyway, moving on. I was at DICE last week. It was pretty cool. It's sort of ostensibly a development conference. It stands for Develop Innovate entertain. I don't know. It stands for something. Anyway, it's a DICE conference. It's about developing things, and it's really weird because I've gone to GDC for years. In fact, sort of one of the reasons I became a game writer was to go to GDC for free.
You would be screened out, or would you? Yeah.
It might be real. It might be the truth. Anyway.
Any game writer knows that you do it for free games, right?
You know, it's funny. I never did.
You sit around and play games all day.
It wasn't E3, because E3 I've pretty much always thought was bullshit. But,
E3 is just like you're being punched in the face forever. Like, if you imagine the feeling
the
of
the classic balls kneeing robot.
Right, it is like being kneed in the balls by a robot.
By a ceaseless, merciless cyborg. Anyway. Nice. So yeah, I've been going to GDC for a long time. This is my first time at DICE. It turns out DICE is sort of like the like elite rich douchebag version of GDC. It's like
that's bold.
That's maybe a little harsh.
Yeah,
and it certainly doesn't apply to everyone. So, you know, to any listeners who are at DICE last week,
it's not about you.
Other lame asses. Yeah, no, but seriously, there were a lot of cool dudes. I did have some good conversations at DICE, seriously, but like it's definitely not like
GDC. The guys wearing a tie at the bar quotient is higher at DICE.
Guys
than at
who don't wear a tie because they're like the hipper.
Oh, right,
cool.
It's guys with one too many shirt buttons unbuttoned.
Exactly. Like with probably deliberately unkempt chest hair to like accentuate their fucking manliness. You know what I'm talking about?
You were checking this out.
I was checking it. What can I say?
Yeah.
It's definitely
this
like
in
a
Las Vegas, right?
It's in Las Vegas.
Like, sure these guys are actually like game industry
people?
Well, no,
yes, I am. Because
this sounds like lounge, like Burt Reynolds.
Because let me tell you, this place is like a million. This place is like a million miles away from the Strip.
You've got to
get in a cab and go $80 worth of cab ride to get to the goddamn Red Rock Casino and Hotel in the middle of the desert next to the Best Buy. It's a really nice, huge hotel, but it's also this hotel, there's no fucking signs anywhere like to tell you where the elevators are. It's just like being in a Kubrick movie where you look down the hallway and it's just like infinity of
just
identical.
You hear the air conditioner.
That was a deliberate choice on the part of the designers. They're leaving it open.
Yeah, exactly. It was really weird. I don't know. It was kind of a poorly laid out hotel. Anyway, so DICE, it's you know.
Sweet.
In case you're wondering. It's distinct from GDC, whereas GDC has obviously a lot of executives and but it also has a lot of just sort of actual people who do these sort of trenches level game development. Obviously not all of the sort of low level guys can their companies are not going to send everyone to GDC. It's too expensive, but you get a pretty broad range of roles at GDC. But DICE is definitely more of people who make a lot more money.
So you would say you could actually use the two different awards shows as sort of like a microcosm for the full show. Where at DICE, you have to pay an entry fee and you're only considered if you meet certain criteria.
If you're part of the Academy, right.
Right. And at GDC, it's basically just the games industry
votes on you.
Votes on awards that they think are cool.
The awards were interesting. Little Big Planet swept everything.
Yeah.
It was crazy. It demolished. It was pretty, pretty crazy. So well done to Media Molecule. There were some cool talks. Gabe Newell gave a good talk about Valve and kind of their philosophy about
their video games,
the stuff they like, about treating development as a service rather than sort of as the culmination in a box product that you put on the shelf and then get on your next development cycle. Sort of how
so
to
they're talking about like DLC.
Yeah, it was sort of the opposite of where the rest of the industry
microtransactions.
Going right now. Yeah, it's them talking about. It was actually pretty cool. They showed graphs of like Left 4 Dead sales over time.
Mm-hmm.
And their recent promotion that brought the game down to $25, they sold more copies of the game that weekend than they did the opening sales period. Like
that's
when
crazy.
The game first
is that
came
retail and Steam, or is that just
no,
Steam
well,
numbers?
Well, it's just Steam, I think, but okay. They actually had graphs also of retail numbers on a real-time basis, which is really interesting because since all of Valve's retail games have Steam integrated into them,
right.
Valve gets real-time retail sales data nearly as fast as they do Steam-based sales data. So it's actually pretty cool that, and I think that's actually probably a big reason why more and more developers are now starting to do Steam integration, because Valve already has all of those comprehensive back-end tools that track all that stuff and do all the graphs and the sort of data correlation and stuff. So in addition to already having built-in services for other things, it's just from a marketing standpoint and sort of an internal research standpoint useful for developers to know how their games are selling at retail.
It's kind of a weirdly benevolent thing. I mean, I don't know. It's weird. Like, some companies must think Valve now has your sales data. That's sort of one of those things where when Steam first came out, developers were like, why would I put a thing on Valve's download thing? They're right. Valve and I'm not them. And now it's like, well, fuck, yeah, it's just the good infrastructure. I might as well just do it.
It makes me wonder if they will spin out Steam and do sort of a separate company just for that reason. I mean, it was a big step when EA finally jumped on board Steam. They were kind of the last sort of pin to fall into place in terms of all the major. I mean, at this point, every major publisher and pretty much all of the minor ones now sell games on Steam, at least some games. It's pretty – Square Enix just announced.
Yep.
They're putting Last Remnant on Steam and – the press release today had multiple references to going to put lots of stuff, and Valve's business development director, Jason Holtman, was like, their extensive catalog going to be on Steam. I don't really know if they have any other PC games, but you know, Supreme Commander 2, weirdly enough,
right.
Square Enix will put that on Steam.
Yeah. Weird.
Very weird. But, that reminds me. I played the Last Remnant demo that they released on PC today. That was the most baffling 20 minutes I think I have experienced in a video game in years.
You want to tell us about that?
Except
about
for maybe Nobi Nobi Boy, but that was in a better way.
Right.
I don't know if I can tell you about it. It was
that.
You'll have to kill me?
It was definitely very recognizable as a Japanese RPG, and I've certainly played plenty of Japanese RPGs over the course of my gaming history, so it's not like I'm not familiar with their systems. But this demo had no explanation of anything. No, it just dropped you into the middle. All of a sudden, you're in the game. There's fucking characters in front of you. You talk to a dude. He's like, we better keep going to the next location. I'm like, what? Seriously? Like, there's no... what? Like,
they made this demo in 5 minutes, basically.
They just, like, chopped out a section of the middle of the game, I guess? Like,
maybe they thought, people don't want the demo to be the two-hour tutorial, so we'll just put right. The thing that happens immediately after that.
We'll be edgy, yeah.
I was so confused.
Chris is like, what do you do?
And then I remember I was playing, and I got to the world map, and there's, like, all these fucking... As soon as I go to the world map, there's, like, four cities on the screen I can go to. And then the first time I go to the world map, literally the first time I see it, the first thing that happens is a new city comes up, and it's, like, new city unlocked. I'm like, what? Seriously? Like,
this
all these other
easy.
Ones are also new to me. Like, what are you talking about? Like, I guess this fifth one is also new, in addition to the four.
That's awesome.
So I went to the new one, because I'm like,
I guess... some guy's save state? Like all the characters are named, like, you know, Alfred P.
It specifically tells you when you start
Jim
up, actually.
3000.
Like, as soon as you start it up, it's like, you may save game data here, but it will not apply to the final release.
Because like, you skipped the first two acts of the game.
Weird. I can't just get to fucking go to the middle of the game with my demo save? That's too bad. So I go to the new location, and it's like some fucking desert somewhere. Just still no context for anything. Big, huge monsters wandering around. So I run into one of them. And I literally, like, physically reacted when the battle screen, you know, it's like the separate, it's like the classic right. JRPG style screen goes all wonky right. And then you go into a separate screen. And I literally, I sort of just like jolted back in my chair and went, Jesus Christ, because the whole screen is just full of numbers and fucking charts and like buttons and like diagrams. Like, it was the craziest.
This is like the Matt Hazard component, RPG component.
And like, I you can, it suggests to you, you can either choose like a fucking crazy number of things. There's like real like quick time events going on during this thing. Like it is the most insane.
How exciting would it be if the retail game opened like this? It would be great.
It was this
it's game, a weird flash forward. You
this
know?
Game defeated me. Like it and the funny thing is it encouraged me to not delve into its insane fucking just convoluted mess of stuff because it automatically suggests to you an action for every character to do every time. It's like if you're low on health, it's like
it gives you 1,000 charts, but it just
it'll automatically point to
press a button
heal and your guy with this item. And I'm like, oh, that actually does sound like a good idea. I guess I'll just press A. So it just resulted in me pressing A a lot and then eventually killing dudes. And then on my third battle, I died and it just said game over and took me back to the menu screen. And I was like, what did I just do? This was the most crazy. This was
thank you for being part of our experiment. Yeah,
exactly.
Your progress has been uplated to the Nobi girl.
Valve's back end just got a lot of psychological profiles.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Set to Square Enix to fucking have a cyborg.
That's when you look down at your PC and see a weird sort of suction cup retract back into the case. Like, what the fuck was that?
Right.
Or a needle has just injected you with something and you weren't aware.
I just realized I was unconscious for the last hour in some kind of crazy trance where numbers were just sort of scrolling.
Try
over my
this
face.
Demo. Yeah. Why was this the featured game?
If anyone wants to write in with their experiences of this demo or the full game, which they may have played on the 360, I would be curious to know what the fuck this is all about. I actually, I posted something on Twitter today that was like, this demo is the most baffling game experience I've had in years. And Naked Sushi, who's written into our podcast before, replied and said, that was pretty much my experience with the real game. For 4 hours. So it might actually just be the most confusing game ever released.
Sweet. Cool.
Jake, you might be right. It might actually just start with, time to go to the next location. I found a new city. Go there. Heal your guy. Whoa, my God. Like, this is the opposite. Right. Like,
you press start at the beginning, and then it just, you can save your game, but it won't matter. What the hell? Do I get to, no?
Also, it defaults to running in a window, which was really weird. Like, everything about this game was
you
like,
you start seeing it reply to IMs and emails in the background. Holy shit. Well, that's why, I mean, when you were describing that seemingly random encounter halfway through the game, it telling you to press certain buttons, it sounds like that's like an inline tutorial system. So maybe that is actually the first encounter in the game.
Well, maybe, but there's also just actual QuickTime events where, like, you'd select a thing, and then sometimes, I don't know why they happen sometimes and they didn't other times, it'll just come up and be like, X, and then you press it, and it either says perfect or you missed or whatever.
And Wario, like, what? Jump? What the hell?
Oh, man, that would be amazing. A Japanese RPG whose battle system is WarioWare. That would be fucking awesome.
Nothing but crazy QuickTime events.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd play that.
That'd be good.
I'd play that, too. So this game, I don't know what to make of it.
Did you want to wrap back and talk about Valve at all, or were you through with that?
Oh, like what do you about what?
Or just what the talk was about at all? I mean, can you give us a quick?
Because
I know you felt pretty passionate about the contents of that talk. I at the time it's worn off now. You don't care.
Oh, well, no. I mean, they were. it was a good talk. I mean, it was Newell talking essentially about their philosophy of game development as a service rather than. I mean, I already said this,
right.
But
okay.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff that makes a lot of sense that you'd think other developers could be doing, but it might be difficult because sort of the key component for that to work is you still have to make a game that's fun enough that people will want to play it for months and months and months and months.
Yep.
That, I guess, is sort of the missing link that not everyone can sort of just slot into their business plan.
Right.
And also, like, as far as providing, like, free updates, like, having a franchise that's actually worth doing that, you know, and not just exploiting it. You know what I mean? Like, having...
Right.
You know what I mean? Because with Team Fortress, there's an inherent value for them. I mean, not only just promoting, you know, Steam sales in general, but also... you know, keeping people interested in Team Fortress. Anyway, actually, I was talking to somebody at EA Black Box, a producer. Yeah, we were just talking about Burnout Paradise, and specifically, I was looking at the new Need for Speed game at the time, and he, you know, we were just talking about
just one of the crazy like sim ones, or
yeah, it's the crazy sim one Shift. Uh-huh. It's called. And I was, you know, I was asking him, like, you know, what's the plan for updates and things like that. And he was like, well, you know, Burnout Paradise it should be the model for the industry, right? I mean, they're doing such a great job. It's really awesome. But, And then he sort of seemed really pessimistic about whether they would actually do that. Like, whether it seemed to him that convincing the suits that is actually a good idea to provide free updates is very difficult.
That's hilarious, because they also publish Valve games.
He had dealt with Valve a lot.
They published Burnout Paradise.
I wish I could remember his name right now. I can't.
I don't know if that works. Nah. Could you talk to the other executive at your company who's involved with those things?
He had dealt with Valve for years. I can't
the guy you were
guy's
talking
name.
To.
Yeah. But
what do you mean by dealt with them? What does that mean?
Well, he just
dealt with them.
Yeah, Johnny, take
the Valve
back.
Problem.
I guess he was with EA partners. But,
oh, okay, okay.
But yeah. I mean, he was just not very optimistic about whether other.
I mean, I think it is one of those things that is, for some reason, sort of inexplicably hard to get people to believe is actually going to work. Because it's one of those things where you say, okay, we've spent money to make this. Is it advertising? Not really. Is it something people are going to pay for directly? Not really. It's a thing that you just put out there, just kind of for free for people who already gave you money.
You know what? And, yeah. That reminds me, actually. You were asking if I wanted to go back to the Valve thing. That actually... I completely forgot about that aspect of the Valve talk. The way they explained why that makes so much sense is it ends up creating marketing that's much more effective than any marketing.
I think it makes sense because it's not really advertising. It's not really game content. But I mean, it benefits.
It's more subversive than that.
Not even that.
But it's also very measurable. That's the thing. Like, it's not just sort of a vague, it helps the brand. It's a very specific thing where at least with Steam, obviously you can only do this if you have Steam or a Steam-like service that allows you to track things
in
real time.
That everyone's using.
Well, but I'm just saying, if EA sells stuff through their own service or if they have really reliable retail data or whatever, I'm just saying, some kind of service.
Yeah. Right.
Steam is obviously more effective than most in that. But... They do experiments. Valve does experiments all the time with pricing and free weekends and guest passes. Like every time they do one of those, they're paying really close attention to it to see specifically which of them has the biggest effect on sales. So, and they have different types of effect on sales that they can actually track. So, for example, guest passes are really good at. They actually target those at specific people who play the game a lot because they think those are the people who are most likely to be the ones who will take responsibility for their friend enjoying the game. This is actually something I've done with my friends who are not big gamers with Left 4 Dead, and I basically am doing what Valve wants me to do. Like I basically helped my friend build a computer so he could play Left 4 Dead because he likes the idea of a zombie game, but he didn't necessarily want to make that leap. I'm like, look, I'll help you put this computer together. I guarantee it's fun. I basically invested myself personally to make sure this guy had a good time. And Valve says they have found that to be the case when they give away guest passes. Those friends feel like when they give their friends a guest pass, they are taking responsibility. And they're like, all right, I have to prove to you this game is fun. So I'm going to give you this guest pass. We're going to go together on matchmaking or on the Steam online. We're going to fucking play. We're going to have the voice chat. It's going to be fun. I'm going to make sure you have a good time. When the guest pass runs out, they see an incredibly high conversion rate for those people going and actually buying the full game. And that's a different type of promotion than like a sales drop, which is more of a broad, can we just reinvigorate sales on a large scale? And they juggle these different types of things and they use it to cultivate a broad sort of user base. It's really interesting.
Wasn't part of that, he said that they now have they hired a psychologist.
An experimental psychologist
to actually like try and design
that's
promotions.
I always, Jake, we were talking about Valve the other day, how sometimes they feel like this weird just sort of, not to pun, but sort of black box that just sort of things come out of it, like weird experiments are conducted in there.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what we were talking about, how for years, like, other than like whatever, Cliff on Counterstrike.net or whatever, the only representation of Valve that anyone had was that creepy fucking guy with the Valve coming out of it.
And even that guy comes from a stock photo they found in their office when they moved in.
Really?
Right.
They didn't even create that image. It's like, here's this weird shit that was lying around. Like, this represents us.
Right. But it's just, you don't really hear or know anything about that company. Like, I remember...
That's changing now, though.
Yeah, I know. They're drifting more into the community stuff, especially since they have these sort of...
Left 4 Dead blog and the Team Fortress blog.
Yeah, when they have these sort of more weird sort of genre multiplayer games, but for a while they were just this weird, especially when between Half-Life 1 and Half-Life 2, when they were just sort of this silent company that made Half-Life, and then they were working on this sort of team military simulator thing, the TF2 Brotherhood of Arms thing, and then they had
acquiring the Counter-Strike guys.
Yeah, it was Counter-Strike.
Didn't really know what they were doing.
Anyway, it's weird, but Yeah, and then when they make Half-Life 2, like, actually, we have been weird, crazy scientists. We got this face guy who did crazy face experiments, and now we have real faces.
We hired a man from Lord of the Rings to make bridges explode. Like,
right.
What?
Yeah, it's weird.
They hired one of the things Valve does that is so fascinating to me is I'm sure they probably have some degree of contract work going on, but it seems like what they pretty much do is just hire people.
Yeah.
Like, those guys don't really do outsourcing. Like, they hired Michael Oeming, who's a successful comic artist. Instead of contracting that guy to, like, do some work for the TF2 comics, they just hired him. He moved to Seattle and works at Valve now.
Right.
No other company in this entire industry that I know of would actually do that.
Right.
Except for maybe Blizzard. I don't know. Like, that's like the weirdest shit I've ever heard of.
It seems like if Blizzard hires you, you kind of just are going to disappear, though.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It's really cool, though, that, like, I don't know. I've become more and more sort of, this is not a discussion I'm actually going to have, but irritated by sort of just rampant outsourcing everywhere. Like, I feel like it's sort of not as cool as the idea. And I realize it's cost effective. You know what I mean? So I understand why it does it. But I like in game development the idea of you've got this team of guys who sort of develops the
If you're sitting on an actual like mint or like a fucking money machine.
Yeah, you can afford to
You might as well just hire Michael Oeming if you want a guy to draw a comic for you.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So I thought that was hilarious.
It does sometimes feel like it is just Gabe Newell's sort of weird, like, foppish house of delight. Like, yeah. I will make a comic! Come to my magical playland! I have all the money I need!
In 15 years, he'll be auctioning off all of his arcade cabinets like Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
It's this weird painting of Gabe Newell with his arm around Peter Pan.
Steve pointed out, did you guys see that? You guys saw the Michael Jackson catalog, right?
Yeah.
Steve pointed out to me one of the... I looked through that entire catalog on last Friday when I was stuck at the airport out of Las Vegas, but I somehow missed this one thing that Steve pointed out to me, which is a life-size replica of Michael Jackson wearing a life-size replica of a Batman suit. You can see his, like, hilarious Michael Jackson lips behind the cowl. It's amazing.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah. And it was only, like, $200. Some fucking ironic internet nerd would pony up fucking five times that for that thing. Anyway, what the fuck are we talking about?
I don't know. It's a good deal, though.
Jesus.
That's a great deal.
For the Batman suit alone.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying, you know some guy on Something Awful is going to pay way more than that.
Next to some No, you know that it is, pretty much
office.
Sitting next to some guy's copy of the Jurassic Park pinball game in their apartment.
Exactly. I guarantee Something Awful forum members will end up owning multiple pieces of the Michael Jackson catalog, and hilarious threads will be made.
Yep.
Anyway,
you want to talk about some video games?
Yeah, Dawn of War 2.
Ooh.
I've been playing the shit out of that
game. You love that game.
I fucking love it. I really, really do. I love it a lot. I have been... This game... Okay, so when I was at DICE, all these amazing games came out. Nobinobi Boy, Dawn of War 2, GTA Lost and Damned.
And a bunch of other stuff.
Street Fighter 4, which I didn't play, actually, because I'm terrible at it.
Right.
I like how it looks. I'll probably get it eventually, but right now there's too much other stuff.
Just to watch the attract loop?
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, even seeing people on the internet already say it's really hard, I already know.
Yeah,
I'm like, I already suck compared to the internet. Like,
you will be drilled.
Like, yeah. But no, Dawn of War 2. Jesus Christ. Like, I have been playing so much Dawn of War. This game.
That's cool.
Yeah, no, I'm really impressed. It really, really, really feels like Relic has... It's very rare these days for me to play a game and feel like I'm playing a game that doesn't already slot into a fairly clearly defined genre segment. Even if it's a hybrid, you know, an action RPG or whatever, you know, like an
action
adventure
game. This one has so many different things going on.
Yeah, this game really is
like
some kind of crazy Diablo-esque game, but completely wrapped in
Frankenstein
RTS presentation and input methods, and the dynamics are somewhere in between.
Yep.
It's a new really
thing.
Cool. Yeah.
More or less.
I am so glad to see a developer.
I mean, there have
this.
Been other games that have, you know, been that sort of, but I mean, this is the most successful.
But you know what's funny about this one is that it retains elements of each of its primary influences incredibly strongly.
Yeah, it's yeah. Like I mean, yeah, like exist. The Company of Heroes mechanics are clearly the Company of Heroes mechanics. Like, they didn't just sort of borrow, like, bits and pieces. I mean, that's, you know.
That's what's fascinating. It feels very evolutionary, but at the same time, it feels way more separate.
Yeah, like the the items and stuff is, you know, that's fucking Diablo. You know? I mean, it's
it does all work together really nicely.
Yeah,
exactly. It's fascinating. Like, this to me is the game design is a very vague science, but like, this to me is a pretty clear cut case where it's like, these designers are fucking superstars. Like, good job, guys.
I think a lot of
did some awesome shit.
The more I think about it, I think that just, you know, the decision to have that separate menu, you know, where you go out to the loadout menu and you've got the planet there and the, just sort of separating that. I don't know. In my review, I was thinking about it. And I was like, it's almost like they took the sort of strategic stuff, you know, I mean, because the gameplay is very tactical. I mean,
right.
You know, and they took all the strategy and sort of just pulled it out and made that the menu section of it, you know. And
no, it's true.
It just feels very separate, which I think that was a really good choice.
And that's reflective of real... I mean, not that this game is modeling any kind of reality, but I mean, that is fairly reflective
You fight the skirmish, and then you go back and think,
what's my loadout? What squads
part of the game is so important. It's surprisingly important. I mean, that was really satisfying that those choices aren't just like, oh, I want, you know, this guy to have the big sword. Like, that actually, can make a big difference.
And you know what's cool? It's a two-way street. Like, those decisions you make in that screen affect what happens as you go forward into the mission, but they're also affected by things you did previously. Like, the more strategic points you've captured, and if you have extra deployments, you can get even more of them, you'll be more likely to get better intel that will let you further use that time to make better decisions about, like, for example, you get a tip as to, like, whether this situation will have a lot of long-range stuff or whether this situation will be better suited by melee guys, and that is affected by things you did previously in the mission.
Yep.
And some of those times you don't know which one, like, which decision, like, for example, which point to capture, you don't know which one will end up serving you better in the long term. Like, so there's a really broad array of decisions that are short-term, decisions that are long-term, decisions, and then decisions that you just sort of make, and then eventually they're fairly minor, but they still have an effect that you couldn't really have foreseen.
The real thing is that there's just so many decisions to make.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, if you look at a game like StarCraft, it's a level, you play the level. The decision is between, you know, do I build this base now or later, or, you know, do I build this unit now or later?
Well, all the decisions are the small
ones. Yeah, they're all, but I mean,
after that mission, none of it carries
over. Yeah.
Jake, you're gonna...
I don't remember what I was gonna say.
Well, you were saying earlier you were sort of, you hadn't played an RTS.
Oh, I guess that's true. That is worth talking about it a little bit. It's just that I've only played like the first 3 or 4 days into the campaign, which is next to nothing. Yeah. I just got it a couple days ago. But it's an interesting game to be playing for me because I haven't played an RTS in years and years and years and years. Like, I mean, like, probably when 640x480 was really cool.
Yeah,
like, I mean,
or at least 800x600.
I mean, I touched Warcraft 3 really briefly, but before that, it probably really was Warcraft 2, StarCraft.
Yeah,
And like maybe Red Alert. So I don't really know what's new and what's not, but it's an amazingly refreshing game to be playing after. I mean, I kind of lost interest in RTS games, watching them sort of over the years become crazy and
overly complex.
And or basically going to rape me and make me not enjoy them.
Yeah.
And this game, I don't feel like it's dumbing itself down for me, but it's also the sort of game that me, as someone who isn't really up on what RTS games are about at this point, can just sit down and get a shitload of enjoyment out of.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the mechanic with the commanders and squads and the relic cover system that's in the game, it's really cool.
I find it really frustrating that people seem to think that it's just dumbed down, because I feel like it's the stuff that we were just talking about.
Yeah,
they've simply made this strategy easier to sort of comprehend and use, but it's not dumbed down.
Decisions you make are so meaningful.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
And a lot of it has to do with just the idea of it being such a different type of game. You just really are making different types of decisions than you make. Like, just the fact that so many of your choices are made during the in-between screens, and those are compounded in that. I mean, I think all your units will always gain experience anyway, but you gain more experience if you're in the battle, right?
Right.
So that compounds. Right. So the more you use to choose a specific unit, you're making a long-term sort of aggregate decision there.
That was one of the few things that I found a little annoying.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, I understand what they were trying to do there, but to me, I ended up picking the same four units, and then every now and then I'd want my Dreadnought, but he was so far behind.
You wished that they would sort of at least kind of...
A little bit more, yeah.
So, you know, you want him to, like, rubber band it for you, make it sort of like a baby game.
You know, that reminds me. There was actually, since we're talking about negative points, there's one really stupid thing that happened in a mission where, that I was completely confused by. There's a mission where you are designed, the mission is designed such that you become overrun, but you have to get to a certain point. And I thought I was going to fail the mission. All my dudes were just completely overrun. I was clearly dead. And then I'm like, what the fuck? My commander is sure taking a long time to live. I notice he's stuck at 23 hit points, and they just hard-coded in that to make sure you complete the mission, he never goes below 23 hit points, and then you just force him through the enemies to get to his objective. It's sort of an effective moment in a cinematic sense, in that like it's the image of the guy battling through, but it's so transparent.
Right, but that's like the Half-Life 2 cutscene of an RTS game. I don't know, where just suddenly like your gun is lowered and stuff's blowing up all over the place you can still sort of run around, but blatantly you're just inside a scripted event.
Exactly,
that's too bad.
And it just makes you act out the scripted event, and I was sort of insulted by that. It was really stupid.
I wonder how many people actually just manage to play that through organically and don't run into the edge of that system, or like if you just sucked.
I saw other people complain about it, and it seems like it's pretty goddamn hard. You'd have to be a ridiculous player to get through that properly, but It annoyed me because in retrospect I realized it would have been a lot better if I just had sent all of my guys to hide except for my commander, and then none of them would have died. So that was stupid.
Yeah, there's another stupid one where you basically land on the planet and then there are just a ton of dudes immediately attacking you, and you can die. Like it's just like it's like a defense mission, but there's no timer. It's just, you know, they just fucking go right at you and rape you. Yeah. But
at you and rape you.
IGN.com. I wasn't, you know, overall, those were pretty minor.
No, it's incredibly minor. I don't mean to try to dissuade anyone.
No, I know. The most I could say, that it does become a little repetitive later on.
I'll take that, yeah.
But, you know.
Do you want to touch on the co-op really quick?
Yeah, we should.
Because we played, after I played the first 3 or 4 days, Chris and I replayed the first 3 or 4 days co-op, which was surprisingly different.
It really was. When Nick was initially describing the co-op to us a few weeks ago, he was like, oh, well, you got four squads in single player, and then if you have co-op, you each take two of them.
Right.
It's like, oh, that's fucking lazy as shit.
Yeah, but it's actually pretty neat.
Yeah, it's cool because the way I play this game, I'm not like a fucking uber micro guy who, you know, was fucking 300 actions per minute in StarCraft.
You just carry around the big bag of guys.
I've got the big bag of guys, and then when I get to a point where some tactics need to be fucking busted out, I'll start flanking and stuff. But usually that stuff arrives out of necessity rather than because I'm generally actually playing probably in the way
I
should.
On the actual like military board where the generals are shuffling ships around, you've just got the like shuffleboard thing, and you're just barreling the whole like the whole bag of Monopoly pieces out.
Coincidentally, in multiplayer, I also just play orcs because I like the orcs. That works pretty well because, especially in the early in like tier one, you can literally build like fucking five squads of orcs when everyone else has like two squads.
Yeah.
So I just fucking send those guys as like an avalanche of dudes and just fucking start like roll over everyone. And then I kind of suck in like tier two, but you know, it's
noob scheme.
Yeah.
Noob
by the time I get up to mobs in tier three, I'm good again. But it's sort of a hilarious coincidental lineup. Anyway,
in the co-op, it's kind of cool because you don't have to think about micromanaging. I mean, you have to manage your two guys, but it's interesting, especially when we were playing over a headset, that you can sort of, there's an amount of trust that half of your squad is doing something, and it's interesting.
It felt so different. Like immediately, right from square one when we started, our units were already diverging, already flanking the enemy, already sort of acting in as like a two-prong assault in a way that was far more organic than anything that happened when I was playing on my own. And it really created a different dynamic. And
just the fact that there
really
were two cursors on screen making the guys be able to simultaneously both move out to the left and right at the same time, it plays cool.
And because the squads are so different, for example, when we first got the scout squad and I happened to control the scouts.
Right, you had the scouts and then I had the heavy minigun guys.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it actually just created unique roles for us that I was the guy who's going to go take out the building. You're the guy who's going to position your dudes behind cover and suppress everyone. And it's just, it's really cool. It's an awesome co-op experience.
And then it did fall apart that one time when you lobbed a grenade, not knowing that I had already told my guys to walk to that exact spot. Right.
Well, that's part of the fun of co-op. You know what I mean? That's like cool. A cool thing. Yeah. So Dawn of War 2, I've seriously, right? This game is going to be surely, you know, one of my best. I can already tell
one of your top
GOTY.cx.
I thought you were going to say surely be underappreciated, but
it will yeah, be underappreciated. No, guaranteed.
Which means we're going to talk about
it's
forever.
A fucking, yes. It's a PC game,
it's the
which
new
means
Far Cry 2.
It's already guaranteed to be underappreciated by the gaming press.
Yeah, I know.
Like that's
yeah.
a sad reality.
Yeah. Yeah, I was actually kind of surprised that
these
it
days
didn't
like
make much of a splash.
Yeah. No, it did,
I thought
really
it would make
didn't.
A little bit more than it
uh-uh,
did.
No, but, it's I run into journalists all the time who just will refuse to acknowledge the PC as a gaming platform. It's pretty brazen. Anyway, we are not them. This game is fun. You should buy it.
Yeah.
Good times.
Yeah.
Also, Nobi Nobi Boy came out.
Yeah, Nobi Nobi Boy. It's the second of three games we might talk about for a little while.
The other system that has a tough time sometimes catching the proper recognition.
Yeah.
It's
PSN has been just punching everyone in the face with a flower last week and then Nobi Nobi Boy now. Yeah, I was playing it. I played on the Earth, and then when the internet collectively sort of stretched all the way to the moon levels, I was checking out some moon.
Yeah, I didn't realize the moon had been reached.
Yeah.
I didn't play this game since the weekend, so...
Yeah, Nobi Nobi Boy, everyone probably knows what it is. It's a game where it's by the Katamari guy. You play as this weird sort of tube man. It's dual analog control where you control his head and his feet. It's a weird little worm guy
Tubman.
That eats stuff.
Mr. Tubman.
You eat things and then it gives you more mass so you can stretch to be a bigger tube man. But the game has no real objective. You just sort of
goof around.
The one thing that it does that's amazingly cool, which is the actual physics of the crazy tube thing. So, you know, you can sort of float up in the air and then tie yourself in a knot or loop around things. You can make fences and sort of pen in the NPC characters who sort of have affinity or hatred of you depending on if you've been trying to eat them or if you've been walking around emitting hearts. They'll ride around on you and then you can eat them off of you. It's just, it's a weird, crazy
game. It's just
game.
Like a weird, tiny sandbox. It's interesting because it's a sort of sandbox game, but it's more like the
it's
literal
like,
definition
a literal
of sandbox,
sandbox right.
where
exactly.
there's like this small little field.
It's a square of sort of slightly rolling hills that have trees and houses on them, but they're all effectively built out of blocks.
Yep.
You can
like
run into the house and it
thing.
Falls over, and then you can tip it on your side and sort of sneak around into it and then wrap around it and carry it off into the clouds with you and crush things.
You
I don't know.
Wrap yourself around the clouds, tie clouds, use yourself as like a chain to link clouds together, just all kinds of crazy shit.
Grab onto a windmill and stretch yourself.
Eat your butt.
Right, you can stretch yourself on a windmill until you snap in half, and then your butt roams around on its own until you eat it and reclaim it. There's this metagame is as you stretch the guy out longer and longer, you send the amount of meters that you've grown up to the internet, where everyone who plays is collective length adds together to stretch the Nobi Nobi girl from Earth, where the first levels are, into the moon, where now you get there and everything is slightly darker, by which I mean American McGee has art directed the moon. the sort of green or desert has been replaced with sort of
Alice game.
Purple shit. Yeah, it's true.
Yes.
And there's guys in flying saucers. It's pretty good.
From the director of American McGee's Alice and the producer of Nobi Nobi Boy.
Oh, Jesus. The moon. Anyway, it's a good thing, and it's only $5, which is the best.
But where's the game?
Yeah, there is no game.
That is one of my least favorite like rallying cries at this point in everything, fucking Little Big Planet, this game, Spore, anything that isn't just like you going on a path doing a thing.
It is weird game? How trained you know you can become as a gamer, you know, when you get into a game like this you don't find something that
immediately
you tells
you
what to do.
Yeah.
Like you can find yourself becoming frustrated whether or not you actually want, like I came into this game, I was like, you know, I
got a linearity police coming.
Right.
Right.
I was thinking about that. What if Nobi Nobi Boy had an objective arrow?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Go to this jungle gym. Loop yourself around it four times.
There'd be less complaining.
Carry it out to a donut cloud. Right.
People would be like, okay. This is a cute little game.
Would it just keep doing that forever?
Yeah, exactly. I remember being actually really offended when I played the Xbox spinoff of Far Cry. And like, I soon
Instincts.
As like the original Far Cry, not Far Cry 2. I'm not fucking talking about Far Cry 2 yet. and like, you know, Far Cry was fairly unique, sort of open world not open world, but like big, large scale outdoor shooter. And then the Far Cry Instincts was you go in there and there's a big fucking blue arrow. Go here.
It's like here, go. The more guys in Ninja Turtle Arcade. Basically. That.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what people want, man.
Yeah.
So that's Nobi Nobi Boy.
Jake.
Cool. Hey, I was playing Empire Total War for a demo.
Yeah. I meant to play that, and then Dawn of War destroyed my time.
Yeah.
I meant to play that, but then I didn't know that the demo was released or that they made this game.
It's Steam exclusive, actually.
Yeah. Well, because the game is Steam integrated.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But, but yeah, no, it's really, really good.
Jake has decided to go into one of his spontaneous lives.
Yeah, yeah.
I couldn't decide if I should barf out something about exclusive demos, and then I decided, fuck that. Talk about this game.
All right.
Yeah, no, it's pretty solid. God, there's so many little details that make a Total War game just mind-blowing to me. Like, just stupid things. Like now the guys, you know, when they're marching in columns, like, they're just slightly, like, off. Like, some guys are walking on their right foot now. And it's a stupid detail, awesome. But it looks, like, so much more realistic now. And as a history geek, it just makes me really happy. But gameplay-wise, it's pretty interesting. It reminds me of Sid Meier's Gettysburg. Kind of.
Yes.
Yeah, the classic game that we've all played.
Well, anybody who's played that game, it reminds me of that game, and you'll be happy if you played that game as well.
Good.
Yeah. Sweet. And also, I hate Total War fans who don't, you know, beggars can't be choosers. I went on the Total War forums and was very sad that people, you know, who clearly this game is meant for, were bashing it out of hand because of strange, stupid historical inaccuracies. And
like what?
I just want them all to die. I don't know, just like, you know.
I can't believe they put laser guns into Empire Total War. You sons of bitches.
Yeah.
They didn't have those.
It's just the most minor, inane details.
Like
that,
what?
I didn't.
It's Rome Total War with guns.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Yeah, there were people, a lot of people saying that, you know, they just put guns on top of it, and there's so much more to it than that. I mean, they did a really good job.
Yeah, the guys march out of step this time.
Yeah, well, all right. You want me to get into this, Rodkin?
No, it's fine.
No, I mean...
Brecken and Rodkin, throw down.
I really appreciate...
Idle Thumbs, Total War.
You know what? I was really excited for the sea battles, but the land battles did surprise me. They added a lot of good stuff. The fact now that you can, that there's like each unit, because, you know, everybody has guns now, you're in an era with guns, that you can switch from melee to ranged combat, it sort of adds an extra depth there, and I really appreciate it. And it just, it all works really well, and I think you should check out the demo. I'll be playing the full game and probably have a lot more to say about it next week.
Sweet. Cool. It's break time. Time to take a break.
Video game.
Oh no, this was confirmed actually. Well, he did an interview like yesterday where he's like, "I'm totally doing it."
Yeah,
ah!
Yeah, he's gonna have a walk on for a day in Sylvester Stallone's new movie, which is just like 80s action star reunion town. So it's gonna feature Schwarzenegger. I mean, there was a rumor that he was gonna be Governor Schwarzenegger, but I think he's just gonna be hardcore blow up guy dude.
Yeah,
he's just gonna show up as Arnold Schwarzenegger, the actor, for a day. Like, he's taking a break from being the governor.
I can't decide which I'd rather see. Like, him as a cameo as the governor of California, or his as a cameo as his former self.
Well, like the thing is, if he was,
they're both hilarious.
If he was as a cameo as the governor, it would be kind of a waste if you're going to actually do Sylvester Stallone movie, unless he was the governor and also blew shit up. But he probably can't do that.
Yeah, he probably can't.
But if he's like,
"I'm office
the governor,"
he's
like, suit torn off, and he's just basically got the Conan costume on underneath.
The funny thing is, the way he said that was a very accurate. Like, "I'm the governor." Like, you know, when it's not as Arnold says lines,
he just can't.
Like, he can't wait to get off to like the next thing. Like, he just rushes right through it so he can fucking get to the ass kicking. It's hilarious.
Yeah, then there's
also if that was his line.
Yeah, right.
I'm the governor.
Sure, turn for some reason, instead of picturing the Conan costume, I'm picturing the He-Man costume where he like tears it off and there's like the medallion seal and the like the 5-point safety harness thing. I wonder if pressing that thing in the middle of He-Man's costume would release
like
all
a
those.
Like a parachute.
Well, no, or just like the quick release race car harness where the seatbelts just snap off
I don't know.
He-Man.
Maybe it's equipped with a hyperglide PTFE feet ensuring slow, low friction movement.
Maybe it is.
Maybe it is.
This is Idle Thumbs.
I'm the governor.
I'm the governor.
Stop it. Stop it.
Yeah.
Video game.
Played the Hawks demo.
What?
The Hawks? The Hawks demo.
Oh, yeah.
That piece of shit.
Wow.
What was shitty about it?
It's just, I don't know. I've never been a fan of like Ace Combat. So, I mean,
I don't know. I hate these games. I played this demo. It was also bad.
You know, I used to play Flight Sims like
Flight
like
Simulator?
Those old like FA-18 fucking God. Who used to make those? Like some weird company that no longer makes games, but they used to make like hardcore.
A lot
Sims.
Of companies used to make those. Like,
yeah,
I mean, companies.
Well, Jane,
weird,
there
like,
was Janes and stuff.
MicroProse made those.
LucasArts made some. I guess those were more combat games.
Yeah. Looking Glass used to make Crazy Sims and stuff. Like a lot of. Important PC developers used to make flight sims because people played them.
It's because it was a genre.
Yeah,
some
it was a real thing.
It used
people
to be
did.
A thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do people just play X-Plane or alternatively Ace Combat? I mean,
you know what I saw yesterday?
Those are so different.
I know, but I mean, it feels like flight sims at one point were
a broader genre than.
I was going to say like, also like a flight combat game probably still included more weird cockpit shit.
Oh yeah.
Than a game like Ace Combat does.
Well, there was the whole spectrum, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
now they're trying
Ace Combat
both,
goes back a long way.
I guess that's true.
It goes back to PlayStation 1.
Yeah.
But I mean, PlayStation 1 does not go back to like EGA PC games.
No, but that whole genre of flight sims existed all through the 90s.
That's
like Falcon 4.0 was like 98.
Okay.
Yeah.
People still play that a lot, actually.
Yeah. Also, Falcon 3.0 was like 1986 or something.
Really?
How do you have
there
like
was a
that
big span between
yeah,
the one point
I remember, I don't
jump.
Know, it was weird.
Were there point releases?
I guess.
Falcon
I don't really
3.6?
Know.
Yeah, Falcon 3.27 R4.
That actually reminds me. Someone sent us an email about this topic, weirdly enough.
About really? Falcon 3.86?
Oh, so the lesson to be learned from Hawks is that it sucks? Is that...
Well, it's you, just... I don't know. Like... You know it's this it's like Red Baron for like the SNES. You hold the stick until you line up with the dude, and then you press a button.
Red Baron was the first computer game I ever played.
Really?
I'm like, wow. I'm like
I used to play that
on like a Hercules graphics like crazy orange monitor in my dad's office. Yeah, it was that in some game where like you were a donkey who was jumping over logs. Those are the two games that he had on his work PC. In the early or mid 80s.
Hawks cool. sponsored the entire hotel that DICE was set in.
Really?
Like every key card, even people who weren't at DICE, every room key card looked like a fucking, I don't know, like an army, like a fucking goofy future Air Force identification card.
Was there like a voice that they also put into all the doors?
No. I wonder if I have mine in my wallet.
Identification declined. What? Oh shit. Gas.
No, I don't know. Not that agent. The people could hear it or see it.
Yeah, right.
They could hear the crazy voice. Hawks.
that name is something. It's just so like you just know that game. Fucking high altitude. Fucking wing extreme. I don't know what the fucking
wing
stands
extreme.
For. Like,
I'm pretty sure it's wing extreme. Winging extreme.
I remember seeing that the X literally doesn't stand for anything.
Press X
like
to wing it.
The X actually.
Enter wing mode.
The X is literally just like an extra.
Hawks
letter.
Rush 2049.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but they did just add on the X just for the X.
Otherwise, it would be Haw. Yeehaw. This Bucktooth guy.
Tom Clancy's Haw. Old man Clancy.
Right. It comes with a piece of straw to put in your mouth when playing.
Yeah, the hoedown minigame.
Yeah. So basically, it's just super simplistic.
The aerial square dancing was cut. Stay in formation.
I don't know. Just nothing about it feels like. Cool. I mean, you know what I mean? Like,
but the X, it's got the fucking X.
Like, down to like the weapons noises and stuff. You know, I mean, if you're going to go arcade, at least make everything sound like a giant fucking missile. You know what I mean? It's just like pew. Yeah,
the rubber band gun might not have been the best Foley source for that.
Yeah. Just nothing really. Yeah.
That's too bad. So we got an email. And it's funny that you bring that up because it is really about the exact topic.
Because this guy, saying. I love the weapon sounds.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Hey, Idle Thumbs, I was playing Hawks. Let me say, that game was sweet. No. Brett writes, Dear Idle Thumbs, are we too jaded to play simulators anymore? Remember when it used to just be mind-blowing enough to know you were flying an A-10 tank killer? Who cared if you actually killed any tanks? Now gaming is all about flow theory and keeping players reaching for the next carrot on the stick. Reading through World of Warcraft's patch notes over the last so many years is like a history in this shift of thinking. Many of the tweaks Blizzard has done to the game have been changing out what they thought would be that type of fun with more efficient fun. The epitome of this is Blizzard's recent decision to remove the need for ammunition from hunters. Think about what excited people about Spore before it came out. Will Wright was basically going to achieve his masterwork, simulating an entire planet. or universe, I guess. What we got, though, was a bunch of typical, safe, engaging game types put under one roof. A popular theory about where Spore went wrong is that it was too ambitious. I can't help but wonder if the real problem was that the Spore team realized no one actually wants to play a simulator anymore, that no one had the time or imagination to enjoy something like that these days. For example, Microsoft Flight Simulator team dissolved, and the mockery around NASA's MMO. I don't know the story behind that. Do you guys know?
The NASA MMO thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember all the details, but I remember the...
That's not helpful at all.
You want to fill us in on that? Why? You remember it. That's nice, Nick.
I remember it.
Well, could you fucking say...
No, I can't really.
You're a horrible person.
There's no, like, wait, one seriously? Sentence, like, one
this
sentence?
Isn't a joke?
Yeah, you're not... No, I just remember that NASA was doing it, and then something happened, and now they're not. Yeah.
It was apparently a laughing stock or something.
I guess was it was. Well, I mean, that's the implication I get.
Maybe they loved
email.
Science too much.
Anyway, Brett would like to know our opinions on this. I think it's a really good point.
Yeah, I love this guy. I totally agree. I mean, like, just talking, like, Flight Sims, like, that FA-18 game, I used to just sort of load it up and fly around Hawaii and just do random shit. And it was cool because it was like, you know, it was a simulator. Like, you know, everything was accurate and I would just sort of make up my own goals and just kind of, like, fly around and do crap. And now that game would be like an Ace Combat thing. It would start with a cutscene and make me, like, go from point to point and do all that, you know, stuff that, you know, might not necessarily be as fun as just making up my own kind of game in my head. Which is why I kind of like the Total War series. I mean, for me, that game gives you, you know, a map and, you know, a set of things that you can do and, you know, battles and stuff. But it's really sort of about creating your own kind of story and empire and thing. You know, I mean, it's more of an open system approach to strategy.
I mean, you know, as much as I fucking talk about it all the time, that's what I like about Far Cry 2, like, for all its flaws.
Yeah.
I like that shooter equivalent of that. It's like, yeah, you're in this fucking place. Fucking kill these dudes however you want. Like, I don't know. But no, I think that there is like a really broad trend to be observed here. And what was I going to say? Oh, it reminds me of, Jake, you were talking before we started recording the podcast about some of the reaction to Nobi Nobi Boy. Uh-huh. Like, to me, that it's very, I mean, Nobi Nobi Boy is by no means a simulation of anything, but it's the same thing where it's like, if you enjoy this, it's because you just enjoy the shit the game allows you to do.
Right, you enjoy just screwing with the mechanics that they give you to play with.
Yeah.
It's not because, like, you're trying to complete a fucking story.
You enjoy steering the Nobi Nobi Boy around and tying him in knots and eating guys, kind of like you might enjoy flying around Hawaii or just the experience of being in a plane.
Right.
Yeah.
And, like, easily the most common criticism I've seen of Nobi Nobi Boy is, well, what's the fucking point? And it's like, well, I don't know, how to just goof around. Like, that doesn't – it's not – I don't mean to say that all games should be that or that every game should be simulating something. Mm-hmm. Of course not. Like, I love Valve games, you know, it's like as far away from that as you can get. But I do think that there is an unfortunate trend just completely that is basically just completely demolishing or discarding that entire.
I mean, do you think that is because either designers or someone else in the chain of games just feels that they just don't trust the sort of potency of their core mechanics enough to be engaging? Or is it just people don't actually want a game?
Well, I think probably part of it was just when certain types of genres and trends started hitting upon, like, oh, you can release God of War or whatever, and it literally is just shepherding you down a twisty corridor and then even telling you what button to press. Like, it's crazy to think about that so many games now literally just put a big X on the screen and say, press this now, and then you press it, and that's the video game. Like, that's fine. Like, if you make it fun, whatever. Make your game whatever you want. But, like, that is kind of a crazy thing. Like, I don't know if I would have...
Well, it's Dragon's Lair.
Yeah, that's true. I never played that. Like, No, it's fair enough. I was going to say, like...
I'm not saying that's a good thing.
No. But, like, yeah, like, 15 years ago, like, it would have been crazy to me if you had said that's... Like, I would have imagined games definitely going the opposite direction. Like, as a kid playing PC games, I would have thought it was really hilarious. It's like, man, you wouldn't believe games are going to look crazy in 15 years. They're going to be so realistic. And basically what you're going to do when you play is it's going to show you a button and then you press it. That's the opposite of what I want.
I feel like, on the other hand, if someone tried to make that in 1995, it would be impressive for the exact same reason that it's impressive now, which is when the content is so like authored and the experience is so finely like controlled. That's the reason that those games can be so crazily fucking showy.
But is there... But
I mean, and I think that's... I'm not saying... I don't know. I don't have anywhere to go with that.
I think part of it is a byproduct of being able to produce images that are so amazing that they can stand up enough on their own to make that a worthwhile thing to do.
Like, I guess that's true.
I mean, I think that is, there's definitely a pretty tangible part of it that is that. I mean, I mean, even as someone who's not super into that style of gameplay, like, it's certainly, I would certainly be a lot happier to play it if it was accompanied by something really engaging and cool rather than just literally doing it for the sake of pressing those buttons.
I mean, do you think that then it is a fair argument that it's because we're still technologically at a point where you can't have both?
I think you can't. Why couldn't you have both?
I mean, that you can't have the really high sort of fidelity and sort of crazy, extremely visual immersive nature of a game like God of War with the sort of amount of agency and interactivity, and you know,
it's just harder to have both.
I mean, that's what I mean. I mean, it's technologically feasible, but it's not affordably feasible to have both unless you're taking a humongous fucking risk with your game.
I think risk factor is, you know, maybe at the core of that. And also, I think, you know, I mean, the guy brought up a good example, Warcraft. I mean, looking at something like Eve, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, the potential of fun in Eve, I mean, you can get so into that game, it can be incredibly, you know, fun to play that game, probably more so than Warcraft. I mean, but the amount of people that actually hit that upper limit, I mean, the amount of investment that it takes and the amount of, like, time and knowledge and, you know.
Yeah, Eve is not going to hold your hand
and
show you the
all.
Good parts.
I mean, it's like the, you know, complete opposite example of how you could design an MMO, but, I mean, in terms of looking at an audience and saying, you know, is it easier and more efficient to develop a game that, you know, holds your hand a bit more? Yeah, I mean, it obviously it is. So,
but I don't think
looking at the bottom line, it's kind of hard to make the argument.
Well, no, that's definitely true. But I think that has more to do. I think that has less to do with sort of can you do both at the same time, and more to do, like, I think people will make the finances work if they determine one of them is more in demand than the other. I think it is, a lot of it is just for a lot of
just
people.
A trend,
yeah, video games, yeah. Just like a lot of what people like about video games sometimes is just, I want to be able to sit on my couch and just sort of have a thing where I'm just sort of putting in, you know, like whatever amount of effort the game demands. And then I get back that paid back fucking 100-fold. You know what I mean? Like, as opposed to there being a 1-to-1 relationship of I get back what I put in, it's I get back, put in something, then get back something a billion times more insane than what I did because some crazy designer sat around and thought of the absolute most insane, ridiculous, like, I will swing around on the fucking earlobe of a mountain tall fucking giant and stab my sword into his brain or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, that's never going to happen in anything. Like,
well, I guess
Shadow of the Colossus.
I mean, I think that this is sort of splitting into two slightly different things, because what you're talking about with WoW and what you're talking about with God of War are a little bit different, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think it's part of, the same overall sort of thread, which is you
sort of hand holding and showing you the good parts you don't have to.
Would an example of a game that does both well be Grand Theft Auto?
I think Grand Theft Auto is a great example of one.
Paid off for them.
Yeah,
I mean, how many companies are going to look at that and say, you know,
well, a lot of companies are going to look at it and say we can do that, but they're going to
screw it up very hard.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, that is a game where you as the player have to go everywhere.
It's also one where they sort of built two games into the same thing. Like, there is the game where you're just in the city.
You play it from then there's the game where you can just go around.
I mean, I think, like, a lot of people in that game, it's sort of a safe enough environment for people who aren't used to sort of forging their own path that people will do both.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely.
But I mean, that's extremely rare.
Right. But I'd be curious to see a game that really genuinely fuses those two in an interesting way. I don't even know if that might be mutually exclusive. I don't know. But I do have to say that while I think it's perfectly fine that there are so many games like what the writer describes and like we've been talking about. Like, I think it's totally fine that those are there. I do think it's unfortunate that that trend does seem to have come pretty clearly at the expense of the other side. Like, I don't think it's an issue of, oh, there's more of those games, but there's still, it's just parallel. I really think that the one has had a pretty marked, you know, decrease upon the other.
I think that, like most anything, if gaming as a medium sticks around long enough, that the pendulum is either going to swing the other way or the quantity of other games is going to grow.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm probably more optimistic than you are about that stuff because you like being depressed by that sort of thing. But, I mean, I don't know.
No, I would say I'm you know, optimistic as well. I mean, I think a lot of that is, you know, just a trend, and it's something, you know, people went, oh, you can do this with a game, and, you know, we're sort of in that cycle right now, and maybe
I mean, I think that that's
people will, I think people will look at games like Far Cry 2 and, you know, a couple years down the line, maybe kind of improve on that, and maybe there'll be some game that kind of is a catalyst for more games that, you know, might follow that example.
Yeah.
As much as I would like Far Cry 2 to be that, I don't think it really achieved that.
You know? No, not at all. But I think like
if
Far
there
Cry
was a game
for,
that sort of, like, you know, Far adopted those principles and it was wildly successful, like Grand Theft Auto is, I think people would look at that and be like, hey.
Well, I mean, I'm hoping that whatever
Grand Theft Auto is maybe even that for Far Cry.
I'm hoping whatever that whatever the Far Cry 2 team is working on, be it Far Cry 3 or anything else.
Yeah,
you know, I hope that they learn lessons from that and then make something. But I, you know, I recognize fully that Far Cry 2 is a flawed game for sure. But, you know, I do like a lot of the things it tried to do and did do in some cases.
I just sort of meant in general. I think that games where exploration of the systems is a point that people will buy the game for on the more mass market is going to be something that would gain prominence
naturally
over time again.
Yeah. Sort of
with all the people that have sort of been kicked into gaming by the last generation or two of consoles.
Yeah.
I feel like.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder. I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, I don't think that's necessarily true in other forms, other non-gaming forms. You know what I mean? I think probably what most people like out of entertainment probably isn't like a super challenging thing that forces them to make a lot of critical decisions. And
I guess that's true.
I mean, I don't really. That's not generally successful anywhere.
That's fair enough, but
Mr. Depressing.
this discussion is going to generally go nowhere. I'm sorry to say.
True. Maybe we should talk about Grand Theft Auto while we're on the
topic. Good point. Grand Theft Auto, they released a cool expansion.
Yeah.
It's awesome. I like that I can refer to it as an actual expansion and not sort of
not
increasingly irritating word DLC.
They've been referring to it as an episode.
Yeah, well, whatever. I don't know.
I know.
Sure.
It's expansion to me.
It's an expansion.
Yeah, episode's fine. I just like not having to call it a DLC. Because DLC has all those weird connotations, but this is a full-on
horse armor.
Yeah, exactly.
Car armor.
It's a full-on story, and they even included like a really cool co-op multiplayer mode that I like a lot.
Several modes, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've only played one of them so far.
The only one worth talking about.
Have you guys played any of the multiplayer stuff?
Yeah.
Which ones did you play?
Pretty much all of them, I think. But what's the one you're referring to?
The one I'm referring to is, I don't know how many players can be in it. I was in it with one other guy, Steve, actually. And
was this the procedural mission generator
thing?
Yeah,
exactly. You're in it, and then you get calls on your cell phone, and the two of you have to go complete a mission. You have to bring a dude somewhere, pick someone up, or go kill some dudes, or steal something.
There's
a whole ton of stuff, and you just keep they just daisy chain them on.
It sounds like it works like the firefighting or vigilante police or taxi mechanic from the previous GTA games, but with actual sort of like main plot style objectives
with more varied tasks.
I was talking to Steve about that, and I was thinking, why haven't they done that before? It's like, oh, they actually have, but it's always been specific segmented things for all those sort of novelty vehicles.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And
it's cool.
Yeah, I mean, have either of you guys actually played much of the Lost and Damned?
I haven't played it yet.
I've played maybe 2 hours, and I got stuck on a mission and sort of got frustrated. And I'm trying to do it to where, like, you know, I just put the controller down and come back to it later so I don't just never come back to it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You're pacing yourself.
If I actually fail 10 times in a row instead of 5 times in a row, I'll probably never come back to that thing. But yeah, I don't know. I think you were saying something about this, but I was after not playing GTA for, you know, a year or whatever, just really impressed by the presentation. I mean, like the cutscenes just sort of blew me away. The lip syncing and everything. I mean, it's just, and the voice acting, especially Billy.
I have to say, I think that the writing in this is fucking great. Like, it is so goddamn good.
It's so natural. It's just
better
so much
than
more
the writing
natural
in the first
than
GTA 4, which is already better than you know, your average video game writing.
Yeah, that's good. It's nice that the GTA writing has been going up from sort
of a
horrible parody of something that tries to be cool to actually engaging.
Yeah. I mean, I was at the AIIS Awards at DICE, and you know, all the fucking I don't even remember who the nominees for writing were. Like it was just. Oh, by the way, it was crazy at the at those awards. At DICE, GTA 4 didn't win a single award.
Hmm.
It was probably the first time a sort of GTA 3 derivative game, you know, a game in that sort of mold, has been released and not won anything at a major industry award show. Pretty crazy, I thought.
Too early in the year. It's the Oscar. We're gonna have the Oscar effect now. Everybody's gonna release their games in November just for the awards.
Exactly.
Well, when people actually care
about
it. They
already fucking release everything in November. It's horrible. But anyway, I thought that was pretty interesting.
That's weird. GTA 4 was like it was dropped surprisingly quickly from sort of the public consciousness.
It really was, and I think it's unfair a little bit because I don't know. I thought that game was especially coming back to it for Lost and Damned. It's like God damn the city they created for this game. Yeah. This is some amazing shit. Like this is something that. I have never, ever felt this way in a video game city, ever. I mean, it really feels like I'm in this weird sort of simulacrum of New York, and like this is what this place is. And like when I came back to it for Lost and Damned, it was mind-blowing. Like I was recognizing little intersections, areas were familiar to me. Right. It was like literally I'm just visiting Liberty City again, and now I'm just doing different stuff there. It was I've never ever felt that way going back to a video game before. It was a very specific sensation they created, and it was the exact one that they intended to create. It's, oh, you're in this city. It's just, they nailed it so incredibly well, and the writing is just so goddamn good. Billy in particular, like.
You know what's weird? Can you tell
me about Billy as someone who hasn't been playing
Billy,
this expansion?
Yeah, Billy's the president of your motorcycle club.
Okay, yeah.
And he got out of rehab recently, and he basically. I really like the structure they took with the story here. Like, as GTA 4 was, the GTA games have always been about sort of satire of America in sort of increasingly less goofy form. And GTA 4, I love the basic, like, I thought that there were some issues with the GTA 4 story, I guess, but the overall conceit of this is the immigrant who comes to America has this image of the American dream. It gets corrupted.
Right.
He sort of falls into all the worst parts about what sort of the traditional, notion of the American dream. And I thought that was a really cool thing to explore in a GTA game. It seemed so fitting to that
right.
their whole thing. And then this game, I think, is fascinating because you're back in Liberty City, same basic thing. It's another game about a sort of fallen American dream, except this, it's totally from a different angle. This is, you are this sort of once great outlaw kind of motorcycle gang. It's kind of the opposite angle. These are the guys who were living the American, like they were sort of the height of the sort of outlaw edition of the American dream. And they've just been on this slow decline forever. And you come in as they are just sliding down into just irrelevancy and sort of pathetic existence. Like it's such a cool thing to explore. It's so much, it's just preposterous to me how much more interesting these basic premises are than every other video game story. Like it's just, I don't know, the guys at Rockstar, they really have some great stuff going on with just nailing that entire atmosphere and that whole conceit. Cool. It's really cool, and I would love to see if in further expansions to GTA 4 they continue exploring that sort of notion of that sort of take on America from the perspective of, like, here we've got the immigrant group, then you've got these sort of classic outlaw, sort of faded,
the sort of opposing force of various cliched New York stories, basically.
Exactly, yeah, I love it. It's like, and it's got that opposing source style thing where, opposing source style stuff where...
Opposing source?
I can't talk. Opposing
Sweet force, mod.
Where sometimes Nico will, like, intersect with the story in ways that are sort of tip of the hat kind of stuff. I don't know. It's really good. I'm really, really pleased.
Sweet. Yeah, awesome. You completed it?
No, not yet. Okay. Dawn of War 2 happened. Dawn of War 2 is one of those games where, because it's got a multiplayer component, it's the kind of thing where I will never finish it. So it will just sort of exist in my life, demolishing all other games.
You'll eventually finish it once everyone else eclipses you and starts raping you. Then it'll be time to put it down.
Right. So, but it's been a while, actually, since I was this into a multiplayer game. This and Left 4 Dead are the only two multiplayer games in years and years that have actually really just hooked me for any meaningful length of time. So good job, Valve and Relic. Yeah. But it also means I frequently pass up on other games, even games that are awesome. So I will play more GTA this weekend.
Sweet.
Yep. So that's that.
Yeah.
I like that game.
It's a good game.
We all agree.
You know, it's really, this is something really weird and superficial, but did you happen to notice that, like, the lip syncing on Billy was really, like, extraordinarily excellent, and then the main character is just kind of wonky and off?
I didn't really notice that, but that's
it felt
funny.
Like they were animated by two different people in the same scene. It was just bizarre. Wow, like, one was completely on, and the other one was, anyway, stupid. Huh.
No, I don't know. I didn't really know. I'll look out for that. But anyway, how about that Dante's Inferno?
Oh, God.
Hey, how about Dante's Inferno? you love that game.
It's becoming a joke. That's like all you have to say now. It's like, hey, about that Dante's Inferno.
Hey. It's like that fucking 10-year-old Penny Arcade strip about Daikatana.
Yeah.
They just say it and laugh.
Yeah.
I really like how that script has sort of slowly been corrupted over time. I think it was on the old Idle Thumbs forums where someone scratched it out and put a different thing that was horrible, and then over the course of the 2 years of that forum's existence, that same strip got like bumped over and over again until I had like 4 stricken out things that were the sort of retarded stupid meme. Ugh, why did I talk about that?
I don't know. Jake tells a story.
Anyway, that remember memes. That strip?
Meme talk with Jake Rockin.
But yeah, there was a sort of reveal of some more Dante's Inferno bullshit, courtesy of like an exclusive Eurogamer trailer unveiling and preview thing.
They were really happy about Dante's Inferno.
They're yes. Eurogamers fucking into this game.
This week, they're going to tell you how into it they are.
Yeah, over the course of this week. It's pretty interesting to me. I'm just going to read some excerpts from this preview because I was curious. You have to wonder why it hasn't happened more often. Plenty of games have been inspired by a good route around the library, but wholesale appropriation of literature has never been the done thing. Could EA then, not exactly known as a creative trendsetter, become just that with Dante's Inferno? Glenn Schofield, boss of EA's Dead Space making Redwood Shores studio, has got the bug. You look around and there are some books that I won't mention, but you go, wow, I wonder why they haven't made a game out of that before, he tells us. And I'm not mentioning them because I want to make games out of them, but this would be one of them. It's a great idea. It's brilliant. Then Eurogamer declares, we agree. Thanks, Eurogamer. Thanks for agreeing that this is brilliant.
Nobody's made a game out of a book before.
Sometimes I just look at the Divine Comedy and I'm like, yeah. Crazy that no one's made a video game out of this epic work of poetry before. Yep. Interesting.
I'm at this point, like, I'm not at all a fan of the God of War games. I've not really ever been able to get into them. It sounds like this is a competent enough game in that style. I just really wish that it wasn't Dante's Inferno. Like, I mean, I think you seem just opposed to the entire concept head to toe of everything about this game. I think it's a ridiculous, goofy game.
I don't care about the game they're making. I just think that Dante's Inferno is ridiculous.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
I mean, I don't give a shit what... I mean, they can make whatever game they want. Like, just the fact that they're actually basing on this is insane to me.
Yeah,
like,
it's exactly what you're going to expect. You're going to see videos of the modelers and the concept artists talking about how the ninth circle so of hell inspiring. Is going to be an ice level, guaranteed. Isn't the fucking thing about like frozen shit in the ninth circle of hell? Yeah. I'm pretty sure it involves some sort of
twist,
some sort of frozen evil.
Yeah,
and it's guaranteed.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention something about the Eurogamer preview, which I thought was interesting. Was on the same day they published that, they published a prototype preview.
Oh yeah,
which was this is a very similar structure of the preview, starting off with the producer of the game or a producer on the game sort of talking about their idea behind the concept. It's a really interesting and unique story, says Activision brand manager Steve Fuller. To which Eurogamer declares, no, it isn't. It's about a young male protagonist who wakes up in a research institute with no idea how he got there, who he is, or why he has loads of nutty powers all of a sudden. Eurogamer just like dumps all over this game. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Dante's Inferno, why hasn't anyone made a video game out of this before? We think it's brilliant.
Yeah, like, that's too bad.
An interesting dichotomy there between those two attitudes. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know about that one. Well, anyway.
It happens when there's two different writers, but at the same time,
yeah,
you read both back to back and go, well.
Well, these were literally next to each other on the front page.
Sweet.
Yep. But they also released a trailer. That was pretty interesting. Man. Yeah.
It's pretty good.
It's got some smoke effects that I enjoyed.
Yeah. It's got some smoke effects. It's got Dante fucking hurling a sword. Like crazy fucking armored, muscular Dante, like yelling and leaping and throwing a sword.
He'll do anything to save the one he loves. He'll go to hell.
He will. I heard that this game is in hell, actually. It's funny, actually. Eurogamer linked to a Commodore 64 game based on Dante's Inferno, of all things. That was a little, like, hilariously actually sort of accurate in that Dante is sort of just afraid of everything and just, like, runs it. Like, if you get hit, you die.
It's like Hugo's House of Horrors.
What?
It's like Hugo's House of Horrors.
Yeah, it's just like you just sort of evade forever. and it didn't look like a fun game at all. So I guess I guess the trade-off is you either make a game that's not fun, or you make a game that is probably pretty fun and sort of rapes everything.
I don't know. Maybe there could be quotes from the Divine Comedy, and then you form a chair out of clay cubes.
I thought you were going to say form a chain, like a combo chain, like out of couplets.
No, I was sadly referring to the Peter Molyneux, Emily Dickinson licensed GDC presentation from 3 years ago. Sorry.
Yeah.
Look that up and be inspired.
Yeah.
It could happen.
Anyway, you were saying the trailer reminded you of Brutal Legend?
I was saying that back before we were recording. Yeah, I thought that...
The worm dude with the teeth.
Yeah, there's all sorts of crazy imagery in this, because, I mean, obviously the actual sort of imagery of heavy metal sort of draws on just weird, crazy versions of, you know, various versions of the afterlife and stuff. Yeah. The Dante's Inferno trailer and the Brutal Legend trailer both, one of them might be an ironic version and one of them might be Brutal Legend. They both even start with the crazy, sort of overwrought film grain shot of the sort of gilded gold ancient seal. And they have the crazy tooth monsters, and one of them has Jack Black and one of them has Dante.
The tooth monsters, it was crazy to me how identical they look.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, Dante's Inferno turns into a cartoon game.
Yeah.
These don't even look like they were made by the same artists.
Oh, no, I don't know. It's weird that EA is making both of these things.
Yeah.
They sure do.
It would be a pretty sweet, Amazon 2-pack.
This is how they're cutting costs in the in the economic downturn. Yeah. There, Double Fine and EA Redwood Shores are collaborating on Jack Black's Dante's Inferno.
Dead Space meets
a heavy metal adventure.
Yeah,
in hell.
Yes. I mean, do you think that there is a plan to actually just make three of these? I was wondering about that.
Purgatorio and fucking Paradise.
Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering just because it seems like with this sort of gratuitous taking such extreme liberties of just this idea seems like a thing that I can claim is from the source material. Now it's fucking in a game. And then you go to Paradise in the third one, but it's actually just it's overrun by the demons of hell. And, you know, I mean, I can just imagine that's exactly what it is. And you've got to fight your way back for truth or whatever.
Right.
And the second one is just, this is the sequel where we changed it to gray.
No, I could actually very much see that actually be the case.
Where, you know, it's like...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
It just becomes Painkiller, basically. In Purgatory, everyone's always sort of frozen in time. It's a sweet effect where, you know, when you freeze a guy in a game with a knight's weapon, you hit him and they shatter. It's like that, but everywhere.
It could be about time, stopping time.
Yeah. We need another of those.
I don't know. This goddamn game.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me. We're going to talk about it every fucking week until it comes out.
We're not going to do
disclaimer,
that because
we may not actually.
If that happens, you will witness Chris being strangled to death live on the podcast.
Sweet.
He loves this shit.
Special video edition.
Yeah, we'll webcast that live. It'll be gross.
Sounds pretty gross.
Yeah. You want to read a reader mail?
Sure.
We should read some.
Yeah.
From you, the readers of Idle Thumbs.
What's up, readers?
So if you have a question for us to talk about, you can write us at questions@idlethumbs.net and we'll talk about you.
All right. So
that's the slogan. Kind of
creepy.
And we'll talk about you
behind your back and then not read your question.
But then also we'll read your question on the air and discuss it.
All right. So actually a number of people wrote us this episode's boring as shit.
Yeah.
A number of people wrote us to say actually, they did patch in classical music support in both console versions of Burnout Paradise. So, well done, Criterion Games. That was a good call.
So you can now simulate that old 80s ad with the guy with the stubble beard who's rocking out,
right.
And then he gets pulled over and turns on classical music and shaves, and then gets out of getting a ticket. So that's especially once the cops and robbers bullshit. Thing not actually bullshit
right.
Sounds really cool once that DLC comes in. It's get ready for that YouTube video. Also, yeah, when the Norelco Razor
ad. Oh yeah, there is an ad for that in the game.
There is.
Well, I don't know if it's Norelco, but there's a Razor ad in that game.
Oh
yeah,
sweet.
So well, I mean, currently anyway, I'm
all
sure
these things are going to combine and
Oh, you know what I wanted to say about the game? I really like the ads in that game because I only find myself noticing them like when I'm in just the most horrific, terrible wreck ever, which is the only time I'm not.
That's when the cinematic
going,
camera
like,
shows
200
you
the... miles per hour. Right. Yeah, when my horrible burning wreckage of a car soars past like the Dodge Ram billboard. Like I don't know, it's really funny to me.
Yeah, I saw an ad.
Or like, in fact, I think there are Gillette ads. That's what it is.
Okay.
And there's Gillette vans that drive around, and sometimes I'll slam into those and see this just like wreckage of an ad on the side of this van, like spiraling over my car. It's pretty awesome.
I saw a shared billboard for McDonald's and IGN Guides. Like it looks like they both
Nick IGN returns.
Yeah, but it looks like they both went in, which is like where you sometimes see an ad where it's like clearly the Burger King and like the Motel 6 that share the same parking lot right. bought an ad on the interstate.
It. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
It looked like that, but it was for McDonald's, the real restaurant, and IGN Game Guides. Like they,
Ronald McDonald called up Rupert Murdoch and was like, "Hey man, you want to go in halvesies
right.
on the Burnout Revenge ad? I heard Obama put his stuff in there.
Burnout Paradise.
Burnout Paradise. I keep saying revenge. Yes, yeah. I do that a lot.
Got revenge on the mind.
Yeah. Anyway, so another person writes, "Oh my God, a Far Cry 2 email. Who is this? Andrew Summer writes, Dear Idle Thumbs, I recently discovered your podcast and was quickly ensnared by the wonderful mix of intelligent video game commentary and poop jokes.
Thank you.
That's exactly what we are.
That's deliberate.
That's what we love.
We love poop.
After a marathon Idle Thumbs podcast blast, catching up on old episodes, I had to buy Far Cry 2. I've been meaning to play it for months."
Uh-oh.
That's the other thing we love.
Oh, no.
"I've been meaning to play it for months, but other games just kept popping up and taking precedent. I know your readers are tired of hearing about it, but I wanted to relate an experience I had with this excellent game," he says. What a relief.
Yeah, I know. That could have been really
shit.
Bad. Yeah. I played it for an hour. Fuck you.
Also, you laughed too much. Fuck you. Oh, no. He likes
in
it.
In one episode, Chris spent several minutes talking about how Far Cry 2 has a dynamic story that's different during each playthrough. I wanted to check this out for myself, so playing for a couple hours, I started another game with a different character to see what's what. I wasn't shocked that the basic plot is the same, but what I found interesting was how different the details were. In the previous game, I rescued a woman who had me go blow up a truck full of supplies surrounded by CIA dudes or something. But when I played through the beginning the second time, I rescued a guy named Paul, who apparently was a deserter from the Israeli military. And according to him, the dudes with the supply truck were Israeli special forces coming to take him back. That in itself isn't amazing. It's basically the equivalent of a palette swap for the narrative. It's the same story wearing different clothes, but it's brilliant and it will keep things fresh if I come back to play the game again, but it isn't earth-shattering. What was really interesting was my reaction to the new story. I'd already played that part, so rather than take what Paul was saying at face value like I did in my first playthrough, I immediately, instinctively thought to myself, no, Paul, these are just some CIA guys. They aren't even after you, but I guess I'll take care of them anyway. Paul's character somehow suddenly turned into a paranoid mercenary who'd been in the bush too long and was seeing enemies everywhere. This is
That's
great.
That's pretty awesome.
This is like the Gordon Freeman effect.
Yeah.
I'm guessing this wasn't the intention of the person who wrote those lines, but had I not already experienced the story in another context, I never would have drawn Paul's character in this way. I would have just taken what he said as true. What struck me is that my interpretation isn't really any less valid. To me, it made him a much more interesting character, and since he soon died in an explosion, whoops, I didn't get the chance to see if he was crazy or if they were really out to get him. I didn't care either. It was an interesting plot point, and Paul gave my personal story with Far Cry 2 some context I was happy to embrace. That kind of thing can't be predicted by a designer, but the system they put in place allowed me to have that interpretation of the character that I might not otherwise have had. This is brilliant, and I hope other developers learn from Far Cry 2 and try to do what it does, but better in the future. Sorry for the long email, but I also wanted to mention that I read Chris Remo and Brandon Sheffield's interview with Patrick Redding, and he was fantastic. Thanks. As a guy with an English degree, a shitty job at a bank, no real desire to write the next great American novel, and an interest in video game narrative, how do I put myself at Patrick Redding's feet and beg him for a job writing video game dialogue in his next project? Thank you for casting your pod, Andrew Summer. That was a rad email. Good job.
Especially where he told us we were awesome.
Yeah. I like that part most.
Yeah, yeah. That Far Cry 2 stuff is cool.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
That goes back to a lot of what we were saying about the kind of simulation style of game design, where that's the kind of stuff that can pop up.
It's also the sort of thing that you just don't notice unless you go and play a game twice, which might not be a good thing, but it's also pretty awesome.
Yeah.
It's both.
That's a big, for a lot of people, that is the justification for that generative content. Not for everybody, but for some people
it is.
Yeah. All right. Elliot Centrella writes, how big is your audience? Or more specifically, in 2015, what percentage of gamers will care about game criticisms and academic questions such as ludonarrative dissonance? That's the whole email.
I don't know.
Is that a reference to the PS3? Like,
I don't know.
Year of the PS3?
I think it might just be 2015 is in the future.
It is in the future.
Yeah.
All of them will care. They will all care. What do you guys estimate? That's my
estimation. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that
100%.
At that point, when developers are truly taking advantage of all aspects of the PlayStation 3 in 2015, that's when it will
everyone
be revealed.
Will care about
well, ludonarrative dissonance will be unlocked.
It's an achievement.
It'll be a trophy.
Yeah, that's not quite what I meant, but yeah,
well, that's what I meant. You see, we have different interpretations based on our unique experiences
some sort
with
of,
that statement.
There's some sort of ludonarrative dissonance.
That's true.
You know. I don't think that that's a question that any of us are really qualified to answer.
I was hoping we could treat it like The Price is Right, and then we'll come back and see. All right, anyway.
Eight people.
Thanks.
Sorry, I'm sorry that we're lame and are ruining your question.
Sorry, Elliot. We don't know what to say.
I'm sorry it was nine.
We like poop. yeah. All right.
Jesus.
Here's the next email.
Dip into the bag.
I've been listening to the.
Take dip a dip in strategy
into
chocolate.
Strategy chocolate.
Don't. What are you doing?
Nick is motioning.
He's sort of wagging his hand around.
Yeah.
He's dipping.
Sort of moving
dipping
on.
It.
Your hand is being like all a right. Wet dog covered in strategy chocolate.
Yeah.
Next reader says, I've been listening to the podcast for a while now. Started around the third episode or so, but have now listened to all of them. Needless to say, I'm a big fan, so of course, according to the internet, I'm obligated to give you suggestions and insist you start following them or I'll start a petition or something. Oh shit, here it comes.
Oh, no.
I've noticed that you guys seem really concerned with the length of the show. Is this a technical limitation, too much editing, a podcast standard, or something else? To me, the longer the better. I think they're too short sometimes. Also, there have been a few times when you cut off a discussion because you feel it goes on too long, such as Far Cry 2. I know that.
That's maybe not the best example.
I know that I, for one, listen to the podcast for just that sort of thing. Hearing cool stories about experiences in a game or any. Wait, this is. Look at all these shit that's tying together. We just gave this guy a cool experience. Someone talked to us about Far Cry 2. It's amazing. This is all
we're
fucking
totally
readers are like
every question
on our
here.
Wavelength.
Listen
this
to
week.
This a second time and we'll say this about, yeah, about right. Fallout 3. It's weird.
Hearing cool stories or any other random information is what makes the show interesting and different. It shouldn't be cut off. Just my two cents. One more thing, Jay Allard to discuss. Thanks, Jay Smith.
Jay Allard's pretty fucking hardcore. He's a good. He's a good
Jay,
man.
Yeah, he's
Jay. Jay's pretty crazy.
He's at a BMX event or something.
Yeah.
Every time you hear the sirens outside, that's actually because people are afraid that Jay Allard is about to do something way too fucking extreme. He keeps one-upping himself.
That's people getting out of the way.
Yeah. There was that time that he leapt from a plane with a wingsuit, and then, you know, it was fucking awesome. An exploding plane, sorry. In terms of the length of the podcast, I think that we try to keep it short because we're afraid that we're going to become boring.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty much it.
That might happen sometimes.
And sometimes it does. Yeah. I mean, as cool as the idea sounds of hours of people being really interesting, I don't know if we're that interesting to begin with, so we'll run out of steam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, next email here. Devin writes, have you ever heard of Unreal Gold? I have. It was the very first Unreal game there was on PC. It is awesome. You know, people who have heard of it may think it is gay, but you battle aliens and all kinds of things. Well, you get the idea. Time to go. Peace out, suckers.
Is Unreal Gold, is that just a cleaned up re-release of Unreal?
I think that was Unreal with the expansion or something.
Probably.
Weird. Anyway, that's cool. You shoot an alien.
This guy has...
I remember thinking that the opening, like...
What the fuck
cutscene
is this?
Of Unreal was pretty sweet. I don't know.
Fucking weird. All right.
I'm taking this at face value. Unreal sweet. You shoot an alien and stuff.
You may think it's gay, but you battle aliens? I don't know what the fuck is
it. I was sort of thinking it was gay. That's why I didn't play it.
Yeah, I never played it. Right. I watched the first 5 minutes.
Let's move on.
If all games where you battle an alien might be considered gay, gaming is in trouble.
It's quite...
Or
yeah.
Likes other games of the same sex.
That's true. All right. Wes Ertelak writes, hi guys, I enjoyed your discussion last week with Scoops Gaynor about, about linearity versus freedom in game design. I'm pretty sympathetic to Scoops' point that open structure games are the best use of the interactive medium, but I do see a problem with open world game design. I was wondering what you thought. The problem is pacing. When I think about a lot of my favorite games, Half-Life 2, I can't stop talking about Far Cry 2.
Jesus.
I tried to create a new reality for him, like the second time I read it. One of the things I really enjoyed about them is that the designers used their control over the ebb and flow of the experience to vary the tension in the gameplay. This kind of pacing seems really important to creating engaging...
What game is he talking about now?
He's talking about Half-Life 2.
Yeah. This kind of pacing seems really... He does bring up Far Cry 2 later. This kind of pacing seems really important to create engaging gameplay and seems difficult to create that variety while leaving everything in the hands of the player. I thought the checkpoint thing in Far Cry 2, for example, came out of this desire to give the open world a certain rhythm, but in the end, it was just grating. Thanks, love the show, Wes Ertelak. I think that's a good point.
Yeah, but I mean, I think you. It's just if you're looking for that in every game, you might be disappointed because I mean, I don't think open world games are trying to deliver a consistently paced experience.
No, I think that's kind of his point.
Okay, I mean, I thought that he said he doesn't like that they're not delivering him a consistently paced experience, and I don't think that they're trying to.
No, I think he just thinks that's sort of an inherent limitation in open world games that.
That's fine.
Like they're not conducive to that. No, I know. I think it's a good point. I think that.
Well, it goes back to what we were saying last week again. I mean,
that's vague.
Well, I mean,
I don't remember what we were talking
that's
about.
That's clearly a point of, you know, I mean, that's something that could be improved with open world games and just in general. You know, if there was some kind of system that was, you know, sort of making sure that you.
Oh, were, if there was an open world AI director.
AI director, yeah, that's what we're talking about. Yeah. So,
it's funny. That's actually something, speaking of Valve and sort of the director and Half-Life 2 and all that, that's actually something that Valve is explicitly tried to, that was a very direct goal. I talked to them about this a couple of years ago, that they were trying to achieve with Team Fortress 2 and Left 4 Dead. Which is how do we take the kind of pacing that we have in our single player games? How do we put that in either a multiplayer game or a co-op game? And Half-Life, I'm sorry, Team Fortress 2, a game with two in it. Team Fortress 2, they tried to do it with basically sort of the moving checkpoint system and converging on the middle of the map and then creating an increasingly intense sort of centered area of conflict. That was sort of their attempt to do that in Team Fortress 2, and then obviously the director is how they attempted to do it in Left 4 Dead, and so
there's fucking Jay Allard.
There's Jay Allard. He's fucking speeding by, it's
he's about to eject out with his jetpack.
Yeah, he might crash through my window in an extreme
zunes
display
across the city. Pink zunes.
God, do you guys remember when all the zunes shut down? Yeah. That was an amazing thing. Like that was an incredible thing to happen. Like at a certain second. Fucking every
Zune dies.
Like, what? They're becoming self-aware. Like, what the hell?
Jay Allard appears on all the screens.
They hate themselves.
Anyway.
Zune.
Fuck it.
30% of Zunes were thrown out that day.
Yeah. So anyway, I can't talk at all. Valve is trying to
Half-Life.
Far Cry 2.
To address that.
I want to work at Half-Life. That's like what people call Apple Mac or right. Samus Metroid.
Yeah, exactly. So it's cool that they are actually trying to take that attitude to. I mean, Valve obviously has never done anything remotely like an open world game, and probably won't anytime soon. It's interesting to see them trying to take the concept of single player esque pacing to other arenas. It's a pretty cool area to explore, I think.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Quentin Bakey's writes, Nick's review is very encouraging. I think he's talking about Dawn of War 2 here. But I've been reading a lot of posts from people claiming the single player AI isn't very good. And that the game is more focused on the multiplayer component than the single player campaign. Both of these opinions seem to be at odds. With your glowing impressions, so I was wondering if you had any further impressions on the game. Being that the single-player campaign is what I'm most interested in, I'm particularly concerned about the AI complaints. Great show, guys. So I don't really agree with that. But
Nick? AI specifically? You know, I don't know. I mean, I think it's more of a... I mean, in terms of the level structure, I'm not really sure the AI, you know, is the focus.
I agree. I don't think it's as relevant.
They're designing... It's more or less like a, you know... I wouldn't say it's a linear level because typically you have several different, you know, options, but it's almost structured like, you know, just any other, just a shooter level or Diablo, not Diablo so much, but you know, you start out and it's like a dungeon. It's more or less like a dungeon with
sort of like what Diablo would be like if it wasn't randomly generated. They try to position guys in a way where some of the guys are positioned merely to be meat shields, and then
I think that's,
other times you'll enter an arena where there are dudes behind cover in ways that actually require you to flank and use.
And there's almost always a goal, whether it be a boss or something you have to capture. I think one of the weak points of the game is that they're, you know, the levels aren't randomized. At a certain point, you know, after you played for 20-30 hours,
you start seeing
the same maps. Yeah. You know, quite often it's too bad that there, you know, there's not more variety, but.
No, I didn't mind AI at all.
No,
And I usually don't like AI in games is not something that usually irritates me. Like I don't know. I feel like people take issue with AI a lot, which is fair enough. Like it's definitely something that has to improve. But also, like I don't really. There are so few games that do it well that it's not really something I feel is worth holding up at this point as like an expectation. It's like, well, just kind of a thing. I don't know. That people design the game around the AI it
I
has.
Think you're seeing, yeah, I think you're seeing games that are, you know, clearly like Fear, where, you know, they tout the AI as a feature, and then other, you know, the rest of the game is just sort of like, you know, basic AI.
There's AI in this game.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah. But
a dude,
I mean,
will shoot you.
Dawn of War clearly is not, I mean, you know, it's like we're saying, it's Diablo. But I will say, in Empire...
like I was saying.
In Empire Total War, though, they've done a lot of work on the AI, and it actually is pretty impressive. I mean, it's
cool.
The way that, you know, typically in past Total War games, you would just, you know, pretty much march your armies up and, you know, the AI would sort of stick to its plan and you would just collide and it was fairly boring. But now it'll sort of react to what you're doing and kind of, you know, if you're coming down through, you know, if you're trying to flank him, they'll sort of adjust and but actually what they'll do is, you know, until you sort of make a choice that forces it into a corner, it will stick to its sort of battle plan as if it was like, you know, as if there's like an actual general, you know, who had a battle plan, you know, we're going to, you know, do this and try and, you know, force you into this avenue. And until you actually do something that surprises it, it won't sort of change. So I mean,
so it actually tries to enact a strategy.
Yeah, it tries to enact a strategy
just
until it has to
on a very very basic level.
Yeah,
dudes here, I'll go there.
Yeah,
until that's cool.
So Nick's abridged review is buy Empire Total War instead.
Well, if you're, I mean, it, I think you'll see pretty decent AI in something like StarCraft, but I mean, Dawn of War, that's just not the focus.
It's just a different type of AI. Like, the type of AI that's in StarCraft is more of that very reactive AI. Like,
right, which I think is probably what, if you haven't played Dawn of War, you might not realize that
yeah,
you know.
The smaller scale the game, the less, you know, sort of mastermindy the AI has to be. Like, I don't really know what kind of grand plans the AI would have room to enact in Dawn of War. Like, it's such a small scale game. All right, so...
I mean, you know, I actually thought of a guilty pleasure, which is like from two episodes ago.
Oh, really? What is it?
Earth Defense Force.
Oh, yeah.
Is, I mean,
I didn't really play that.
Like, I guess it's like the classic guilty pleasure game, but I mean.
Yeah, I think that game was sort of explicitly designed to be that kind of game.
As that. Yeah, it's like Starship Troopers.
We just sort of put big ass fucking sprites for the weapon. Like, we don't give a shit.
Yeah.
But you know you want to blow up some ants.
For like 50 levels, yeah, that was a good co-op game.
Sweet,
that's cool. I played it at a press event and then I didn't.
Oh no, it's pretty it fun.
You felt guilty
in co-op.
I felt totally guilty.
Split screen support,
nice
for those who
split screen is a winner.
Wondering.
Yeah,
sweet,
good times.
I think that's an internet pod.
Probably it is.
So yeah, just one more time. If you have questions or a reader mail of any sort, just write us at questions@idlethumbs.net and we will.
Yeah.
We'll
if
talk
you
about
don't,
it.
We have even more shit to read next week that we didn't get to this week.
Yeah.
Cool.
So thanks for listening to the internet.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Hey, video games.
Video games.
Anyway, I got back from DICE the other day, which is the...
sorry.
Jake is doing his customary derailing, like based on absolutely nothing.
He didn't even have anything to say that time. It was just DICE. It sounded like the start of a stand-up routine.
So I was.
I got back with DICE the other day.
Boy, am I tired.
Let me tell you about DICE. Take my DICE,
please.
So you were at DICE.
We need to do a footnote for Big Bird's Bones.
Bullshit.